Excellent. So we have a bunch of topics that we're going to cover. We have a bunch of topics that we're going to cover today. You saw I reorganized the source sheet. I hope it didn't throw you off too much. But I just wanted to separate the URA discussion, put it a little higher in the source sheet, and then try to... There's some duplication in the Makoros because I wanted you to see the whole Makoros, but then when I wanted to focus on something, I just cut out the pieces that I wanted. So you'll see a lot of the Makoros are duplicated in the source sheet, but it'll help just for organizational purposes to see it that way. So let me start off with one thing that is really just Chazara. Well, it pertains to just the general theory of Yored, the idea of compensating for benefits that you receive. I just wanted to tell the story that Zachariah alluded to two shiurim ago, and I'll share a little bit from this Beis Din decision. It's an interesting case. I actually go back and forth on it still. I'm not sure if the decision is totally right. But we saw in our analysis of the applications of the Yored principle, where the Rishonim and Poskim apply it to all these service cases. You provide a valuable service to somebody, you're entitled to be remunerated for the service. Like the Meisho Aveda case, you return somebody's lost item. The case of the Talmud Torah, you teach somebody's child Torah. And the case of a shadchin or a sarsur, the broker. Now, we'll talk maybe about this case a different time. There's a different case that I'm not really going to talk about now, just an interesting case where a parent sent their child to a yeshiva in Israel without having worked out a contract with the yeshiva. This surprisingly happens more often than you would think. But you can imagine this yeshiva said, oh, we really want your kids so badly, and you know, they were negotiating a little bit about finances. They never signed how much the parents could have to pay. It's exactly like the case in the Mordechai that we saw. Mordechai said, somebody said, teach my child. They didn't work out the details. So in that decision, we just put in a footnote. It wasn't what governed our decision, and said, you know, at a minimum, the father would have to pay for the benefits the kid received. Or at a minimum, we put a little more... precisely, at a minimum, the yeshiva would be entitled to recover for the benefits they conferred on the child, like specifically dorm, room and board, because that's like a benefit they could receive. Maybe also for the Talmud Torah component, that's a little controversial, we could talk about separately. Actually, in that decision, though, that principle of Yored didn't govern the decision. And one way of thinking about it is that it wasn't obvious that the father would be responsible for the benefit that the child received. The child's a gadol, right? He's a graduate of high school. I don't know, how old are you when you graduated high school? 17, 16, 17. 18, whatever. So it's actually, so one of the dayanim said, oh, this is a Yored case. I won't say which person that was. Might be walking outside right now. He's not, but... And he's like, oh, it's the classic Yored case. The father received benefits from the yeshiva, so we should charge for the benefits. And my objection at the time was like, no, the child, the son received benefits. The son was not actually a party to the Din Torah, right? So the Din Torah is between the father and the yeshiva. So it's a real curveball. And we wouldn't even have jurisdiction to say, okay, we were hired by the father and the yeshiva to issue a decision, but the real person who's chayiv is the, you know, the son. So it's just an interesting thing you have to take into consideration about who the nene is. That's one interesting application. The case that I wanted to really mention for our discussion today is what Zachariah was alluding to, this case of the broker who turned into a flipper. Shmuel, do you remember this case? Did we discuss this case, Shmuel?
Not when I was there last year.
Okay. So I actually have it here on my screen. I'll share it. See if I have it. Okay, I'm going to share this. I redacted the confidential information here, so all these names are made up. But this is the decision that I wrote. The background of the case, you don't have to read it. I'll just tell you the background. is you have this guy who tries to buy properties and then flip them for a profit. Okay, so it's called the flipper. Anybody know this, Malacha? Yeah. So So there's a legitimate way to do it and an illegitimate way to do it. The legitimate way to do it is where you actually buy the property and then you fix it and sell it for a profit. And there's a more of a scheming way to do it where you almost buy the property, you go under contract to buy it, and you basically flip it to a third, to a buyer, simultaneously as you purchase it from the seller. So it's a bit of a scheme that could blow up in your face. But the idea is, suppose that Zachariah is selling a property. So he puts up like a for sale sign. I get wind of Zachariah's sale. I say, okay, Zachariah, take it off the market. I'll pay you $1 million for the property. Our lawyers start talking. They draft up a contract. Then I go and I start advertising property for sale. And I find, let's say, Eitan in this case. And I say, Eitan, I have a great property. I'll sell it to you for $1,300,000. Really great property I own. And then I get Eitan to make a down payment. And I use that down payment to actually fund my purchase from Zachariah. And I get a $300,000 cut, a $300,000 spread on the flip. Now, I don't buy it from Zachariah because I'm not really interested in the property until I have Eitan locked in. It's a dangerous scheme because if Eitan gets wind of the fact that you don't actually own the property, he could just cut you out and buy it directly from Zachariah. Right? That's kind of the risk of not owning the property, not actually purchasing the property from Zachariah until you get Eitan locked in. So it's a scheme that really relies maybe on some element of fraud where you represent that you own the property when you're really just about to own it. Everybody see that? Yeah. So, oh, hey, Josh, we see you now. That's the scheme. So that's kind of what happened here. In this case, so let's say me, the flipper, I went to Zachariah. I told him I'm interested in buying it. I found Eitan. I brought Eitan to the property. I showed him. We walked it through. Eitan's on board. But then at a certain point, Eitan caught wind of the fact that I didn't really own it. Because when I drafted up a contract with Eitan, he's like, show me your title to the property. And I was very sketchy about this. I only show him that I have this contract that's not yet signed. So Eitan says, I'm going to call the bluff and just buy it from Zachariah. And as what happened, Eitan buys it from Zachariah for $1 million. So in this case, the plaintiff, the Tovea, was me, basically. Right? I'm now suing Eitan for cutting me out of the deal. Now, there are different ways to try to do that. The details don't really matter for our purposes. But what we analyzed in our decision, so the plaintiff in this case actually wanted $300,000, which is the amount he lost by being cut out of the deal. So that's the amount he was damaged. Maybe there's a secular law basis for that. There probably isn't. Depends on this non-Jewish legal principle. But we wrote this in our decision. Do you guys see this on the board? Jewish law? And I'll just tell you outside, our chap was to say that the flipper nevertheless provided a benefit to Eitan by introducing him to the property and connecting him with the seller. In other words, he provided the benefit of a shadchan, of a sarsur, of a broker, even though he was intending to act as a flipper. You guys see that? So we wrote here, and actually we'll see something today that might cast some doubt on this decision, but we wrote, Jewish law generally requires a beneficiary of a service to pay for a received benefit, even if the two parties never entered into a formal agreement. That's a nice formulation of Yored, correct? The beneficiary is presumptively liable to compensate the benefit conferred unless he can demonstrate either that he received no benefit or that there was an understanding that the benefit conferred would not be compensated. Like maybe like, you know, you're an intern type thing. This is not for your mocha in advance, something like that. The paradigmatic and most frequently discussed case in halachic literature is brokerage commissions. That's like shadchanos and sarsos. So we say, based on the evidence that we collected, we believe that the flipper conferred a valuable benefit upon the purchaser because the flipper introduced the purchaser to the property, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. So we motivate that claim a little bit. In fact, the ultimate buyer, Eitan in this case, was able to close immediately after that without a broker, Meaning Eitan didn't require any services beyond those that were provided by the flipper, right? It's not like there was another broker who was brought onto the deal. Okay. Then we say, and here's where the argument really cut the other way. Anybody sympathetic to this, this argument? So the argument is like, wait a second. The flipper can have it both ways. He can't act, let's say, as a broker, or he can't act as a buyer seller, a flipper, trying to make the higher spread on the flip, right? The $300,000 profit, and then always have like the backup of being like a broker and getting paid for the benefit that he confers. So we say, we're mindful of the argument that the flipper, though himself a licensed broker, was acting as a flipper and not as a broker. Arguably, a flipper forgoes his brokerage commission in pursuit of the more lucrative but riskier spread on the flip. On this view, one can choose to act either as a flipper or as a broker, but not as both. You guys sympathetic to that counter argument? Remember, Romy's not sympathetic to it. Who is sympathetic? Because the broker would get a smaller percentage. The broker usually gets, let's say, 3% of the sale, right? So 3% of $1 million would be a 30,000. Here, the flipper gets like a much nicer cut of it, right?
That's... Why are you assuming you forgo that?
What?
Why are you assuming you forgo that just because it's signed?
Well, it's like you, what service were you providing? Were you providing a brokerage service or were you a buyer and a seller? If you're a buyer and a seller, you don't get also a brokerage commission, right? So it's like, which hat are you wearing, Ethan?
And also, like, the only service that you're actually providing, like, as you're acting as a broker, like, it was only so that you can then exploit the next buyer and do more.
Exactly.
So, I mean, like, right, meaning, like, the only, you would only even provide a broker while not getting, like the game off.
Yeah, he's doing it for his own benefit.
It doesn't matter what hat you wear, it matters what service you provide.
Okay, so that's a bit, so we'll actually see something in the Ramban today that would support the counter argument, right? The we are mindful counter argument. I don't know if anybody caught that in the Ramban. We'll draw attention to that today. Big chiddush of the Ramban in the Mochamos. But we reject that because we sided with Rumi's logic. Rumi's logic is, so this argument would have bite if Shulman's, this guy's right to compensation turned on formal classifications. But from the perspective of Jewish law, it matters not whether the flipper formally acted as a broker, but whether he just provided services and conferred a benefit that can be valued accordingly. So, Romy, that's kind of what you're saying, right? Did he provide a benefit or not? Who cares what he right? That's and that's what we say. We say, in our opinion, he conferred that benefit and is entitled to be compensated for it. So we have, that's how we cited, and we gave him like a percentage. It doesn't matter now how we calculate the percentage. That's the rest of this decision here. But that's how we came down. So like a nice yored principle. And footnote 11, you see, we cite this Aruch HaShulchan in Kuf Pei Gimel Hei in Choshen Mishpat. A nice little case in the Aruch HaShulchan. I added it to the source sheet. The Piskei Choshen actually quotes it, but the Aruch HaShulchan is here in Kuf Pei Gimel Hei. So the cases that the Aruch HaShulchan discusses,
I hire Ariel to buy a property for me. And then Ariel does a very bad thing and buys it for himself instead of purchasing it for me. So there's some cases in Halacha where that doesn't work. There are some cases in Halacha where that does work. But in a case where it does work, the Aruch HaShulchan says, at a minimum, Ariel has to pay me for introducing him to the property if Ariel didn't know about it separately, right? So even though I was just trying to purchase the property for myself, via Ariel as my agent, Ariel has an obligation to compensate me as the benefit conferred, even though I was only really acting in my own interest. Right, so you can see here, Aruch HaShulchan says, "Omer l'shliach liknos lo chefetz v'kana ha'shliach la'atzmo." In a case where it works, "Im lo yada ha'shliach mi'achefetz rak mi'amishalech." If Ariel only knew about the property because of my directing him to purchase it for me, he's got to pay me as the broker on the deal, even though I wasn't intending at all to work as the broker. Now, you could say the cases are distinguishable, right? There's a different case when I am the victim of Ariel's bad faith and the case where
the case where the flipper is acting in bad faith. But we thought that these cases are sufficiently analogous to motivate the idea that even when somebody's not acting with intention to provide the service, they're still entitled to be remunerated for conferring the benefits. You guys agree? So that's like a application of the theory of iure to an interesting dispute. Thoughts on this case? We'll see actually in a few moments that maybe the Ramban and the Machamos would disagree with our decision. But for now, this sounds good. Thoughts? Romy, you look a little...
Yeah, I mean,
So who do you think should get remunerated?
Well, within the case, I meant you remember me correctly, but like when he had the guy go married, like he suddenly married someone or the other friend, the guy by himself.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't.
So that Baruch HaShulchan is commenting on those types of cases and says, yeah, if you only knew about it from the Mishaleach,
so you have to say either
you have to pay
or correct, knew about it.
That's exactly the Baruch HaShulchan's position, 100%. Okay, thoughts on that case? Nice little case. Yeah, you agree with the Bezin's decision in that case, or Josh, you disagree? Anybody disagree with the decision? Kobe, you disagree?
No.
Well, you disagree with it. It's the no. Ned, you agree or disagree? Reasonable, defensible. Yeah. Okay, so that was just a one interesting application that's gonna we're gonna come back to in a moment with the Ramban. Okay. The second item I wanted to address, and this gets into what we left off with in the last year, the debate between the Baal HaMor and the other Rishonim about whether it's sensible to distinguish between Lechatchila and Bidyevet. So anybody want to remind us of the Baal HaMor's position? Ned, do you remember? Yeah. So if the makif is toveya the nika to so the point about more of the cases of a makam shenagu ligdar, so there is hezekria. If the makif sues the nika to participate in the wall, then he could be mechayev him to chip in for each wall individually, right? But if he builds it unilaterally without consulting the nikah, then he only gets remunerated when? Yeah, when he builds four walls around the nikah's property to totally be misalik hezekria from all sides. Now, I think maybe we were a little too quick in interpreting the Baal HaMor as reading the whole sigya as just being about hezekria, the takan of hezekria. It might be possible, and maybe this is a more persuasive reading, so we can discuss this right now. Maybe the Baal HaMor thinks that if you build it lechatchila, then your entitlement flows from the takana of shteinim or hezekria, whatever that is. If you build it unilaterally and you want to collect ex post facto, you're not collecting under the takana, under your rights of the Mishnah and Daf Beis to jointly have a wall between the properties. What you're actually collecting under is a theory of yore, of having conferred a benefit, in which case you only are entitled to collect from the nikah if he is actually benefiting from no longer having hezekria from all four sides. So if that's the case, then the Baal HaMor is working within a hana-based theory in the ex post facto scenario. Does everybody see that? Do you agree that that's a possibility in reading the Baal HaMor at least? Let me just say something. If that's true, then the objection of the other Rishonim to the Baal HaMor is basically, why do you have to come on to a chiyuv of Hana in the ex post facto case? Shouldn't the makif still have the right bidyeved when he builds it unilaterally to be remunerated under a direct theory of hezekria? Under a direct theory of there's a takana to build a wall between the properties. You guys see that? So it's a bit of an open question to my mind whether the Balam Mor thinks there's a conceptual distinction between the basis of liability in the L'chatchila case, Tavo Meikara, there it's Mitam Hezekriya, and in Mitam the Takana or the Maker Adina being the Salik Venezek, and the case of ex post facto where you build it unilaterally, maybe there you're only collecting Mitam the Hana of having been Misalik Hezekriya, but not Mikoach, the actual Maker Adin Chiyuv that neighbors have to Misalik Hezekriya from each other. Yeah, Ned? Do you agree with that possibility? And
whether or not you assume that Hakada or the X only as a long that not the
when who puts up the fourth wall? No. Why should the Maka putting up a fourth wall shed any light on faith of Hezekriah? Well, it's got in the Sugya, it's both the Makif and the Nikaf, either or. So it's got to be sufficient for the Makif to have built it. Let me just throw out the other possibility in reading the Balam Mor for a second. The other possibility is as we were explaining it last week, which is that the Balam Mor is not appealing to Yored or Hana at all. He's working both L'chatchila and B'diavad within the theory of the Takana or the Ikra Din of the duty to be Misalik Hezekriya through building a wall. But he still thinks that the Takana gives you greater rights if you do it L'chatchila working together when you sue him ex ante to build it than if you were to build it unilaterally on your own. So like the Makif, who's trying to force the building of the wall, has weaker rights, lesser rights, if he acts unilaterally than if he acts in concert with the Nika. That's the way we were explaining it last week. I still prefer the second explanation, but Romy's going to weigh in on which one's better.
Well, I just call me referring to this reading.
Yeah, this reading being the one we used last week.
No, sorry.
The newer one. Yeah.
But then you kind of came to the fact that you're not, like in general, we don't say that you're going to tie until all of it up. So it shouldn't really be that I'm only responsible. Like in that case, if I built one wall.
Correct. There should be Hana for each wall individually. Right? Even on a theory of Hana. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. That would be like a. So it actually is a little more elegant to explain the Balam Mor as working within the Takana of Hezekriya, and then you're penalized for acting unilaterally.
I actually do see the argument, like conceptually, to say protecting Hezekriya means you have a totally protected space, and therefore not protected until you have all the walls enclosed. But we just see it
not. Right, it's not the case in general because the Takana allows you to build individually. So there's got to be some utility in that. Yeah, some benefit in that by itself. I agree with that. Good. So are we all, now that we had Shabbos to think about it, do we like the idea that the halacha incentivizes you as the makif to work in concert with the nikah? Ezra, do you like that idea? You like the idea of working together? Is that idea conciliatory with you? Yeah, I think it's a nice idea. And especially when we think about this from the perspective of a Shanin. So you could see how the preferences of the parties are maximized when they both have input into how the wall is built, as opposed to when one party unilaterally builds it and then sends a bill to the other guy to remunerate him. Right, it's good policy overall to encourage the parties to work together in designing this so that each could have their input and literally construct the thing according to their mutual preferences. Ned? And by the way, let me just say one more thing. I think that works nicely with the language of the Balam Mor, where he says, "V'ilu mitchila tavo ligdor imo." So look at that. If you were toveah him to be magdi, to be go there with you, right, to work with you in building the wall. So then Kuli Alma Modin Machaivin Osas. And of course you'll be Machaivin for each wall separately. Ela Lafisha Hikdim Hamakif Gadar Midas Atzma. Right? But because the guy got up and the Makif did it Midas Atzmo unilaterally, right? That's why he's not entitled to collect. So there's something wrong with acting unilaterally. So I think that might just work nicely with this formulation here about Ligdar Imo versus Gadar Midas Atzma being the basis of the distinction, right? Did you act unilaterally or in concert with the neighbor? Okay. Some people in a bicker don't care about the hezekri of the rabbin. I think you're saying this part. Say it one more time. Yeah. Yeah. If he himself is not. Yeah, I think this part of the Baal HaMoor is a little tricky. I think here the Baal HaMoor is just trying to say, why is it that in a chatzer, every wall is a basis for chiyuv automatically? Correct. But in a bika, even makom shenagu ligdar, it's not as automatic. So because it's still makom shenagu ligdar, so there's still some value or halachic interest in those things. But it seems like it's not as absolute about whether people care about the hezekri of the rabbin. I agree. It's a delicate position that the Baal HaMoor is trying to stake out, right? But I'm just saying, if the makif puts it up, it doesn't tell you anything about the nikaf's perspective. I think he's just trying to explain why the halacha is not going to allow the makif to collect in a bika makom shenagu ligdar for each individual wall. And his point is just that the halachic interest in snias is weaker in a bika than in a chatzar. It's like, why is there any basis to distinguish between chatzar and bika? This thing that some people lo ichbat lahu the hezekri of the rabbi. Okay. Next that. Where are you? Meaning, or if you have field on all four sides. Right. But that's just, he's just saying that the halachic interest in hezekri and a bika only kicks in when there's all four walls that are up. Let's talk more about this separately, because this Baal HaMoor is tricky on just that part of it. I think it's better to isolate that from the l'chatchila b'diavad distinction. Right, Ned? Okay. Okay, one more quick point in this Baal HaMoor versus other Rishonim machlokas. So as we saw in the last year, all the Rishonim are upset with the Baal HaMoor for distinguishing between l'chatchila b'diavad. We looked at their formulations. You can see again, the Miri just, I think, had the most powerful one. But we saw this also in the Ravid. Here, Tema Gadol Shein Kamo, Because if they and if like if there's a minhag, that's as if there's like a halachic obligation, then right? Why should the makif be penalized by doing it on his own? So the Rebbe doesn't like that distinction. Same for the Ramban, the Machamos, keeping the high bini nachuvayu ram yavasluke in his kaminayu. Since you have halachic chiyuv to masalik, and that's actually chusa bideyava. You're just doing the agency of the guy on the inside. So again, there shouldn't be a difference whether you're tovea him or not. Same in the Meiri. Umihechon yatzalomar shakolshu kofer laasoso. If you could compel him to do it, and kidem huva asa loyachricheyu bepirona otza. Why couldn't you compel him to pay ex post facto?
So I'm actually sympathetic to the Baal HaMor's view. I think it makes a lot of sense that the halacha should encourage you to work together with the Niza. Anybody with me on this? Is that kind of obvious?
No? You can say you're closer than the same thing. Like, having a snail's not as a pita and just like, I was like, oh yeah, I think that's the they don't pay.
Say it again?
I don't know, I feel like this is such a departure from the entire topic, but also the fire. And it's like
that you have to be tovea him.
Yeah, about the concept of Hila and the other half. I mean, I don't know.
Why? It's just I don't think it does violence there. Anything at that phase. That phase is perfectly intact. It's just qualified by you gotta serve him with the paper saying time to build a wall. No? You guys agree? It's bad policy to allow.
Weird way to say that.
What's a weird way to say that?
Like that's a weird way for the Gemara to say. By the way, this whole thing really needs to be done. I mean, whatever. This is like a different kind of question. It seems like kind of thing that should have been said in the Mishnah.
The Mishnah should have been explicit about this distinction.
Yeah.
But I think it's a different type of question because, right, how the Gemara, right, I mean, any Reb Chaim you read, it's like strange that this legal principle has to emerge from like a Stira and Rambam. You know, why couldn't the Gemara just tell us the legal principle and our lives will be much easier. So, right. So I think like the pedagogical question of why does the Gemara present it this way or how the Gemara presents things should be distinguished from the how plausible or coherent the legal position is.
I also think the legal position is not so coherent because it doesn't just explain what not ever going to do. Right? Like, especially if the fourth wall is just,
So what? So like the halacha should never allow him to be remunerated?
Meaning, once you're saying that you shouldn't get paid because you didn't feel provision, you haven't done anything. It's one thing if you did something that like was like going back on that and now it's okay. You know, like this seems totally unrelated and now he's on the side. I mean,
yeah, that's interesting. It's an interesting point, but you don't hear the counter argument, like what's lost by requiring him to try to work with the Nizak to build a mutually acceptable wall. I mean, think about like the Raz position that we saw, that the Nizak has a right to have it on his property to be so mech korosa. Right? I mean, if you put it in that context, I think it's a very strong case.
Why can't you say what you're saying? You shouldn't be able to say what you said without saying then that the guy ever has to pay.
At all.
It's even stronger, it's even more like, yeah.
That's like cruel and unusual punishment, right? I mean, no, not cruel and unusual, but that's too, that's like.
It's exactly like, you know, it's saying no. You
know,
is not a thing. You can't do that.
Okay. And I'm saying, no, Avidinajinapshe is a thing, but it's just not as preferred as working together. In advance.
I guess just once I think already that you know it makes a little bit of sense to say he should never pay, then the only reason he should have the right to pay is if he does something that like undoes the mistake that he hasn't done.
Maybe. Yeah. But I'm saying there could be an in-between ground where ideally preferred way is to do it through a tvia, then there's a less preferred way where you have lesser rights if you act unilaterally. But acting unilaterally and remunerating the makif is still a halachically preferred position than deterring the makif from wanting to build that wall altogether. Because if he does, right, because if he's not remunerated, maybe he won't build the wall and then there'll be more hezekriya all around. So you want to incentivize him to act unilaterally let's say when the kneecap is uncooperative.
Or whatever. Why do you think he gets paid in the lateral hold again?
Because he's on the Balmor's view, because he's misalik hazagriya. Right? There's a halachic obligation on both parties to misalik hazagriya. And here the makif took care of it for both parties. What?
But he only took care of it because
right. So you have to figure out like why the halacha throws in that extra obligation. But I don't think that destroys the whole theory. Daniel, you have a hand?
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with Romy. I'm not super sympathetic towards the Balamores. Because I couldn't catch everything he was saying, but like I do agree that
that's probably why you were sympathetic.
What?
That's why you were sympathetic.
No, I'm not sympathetic to the Balamores reading.
No. You couldn't catch everything Romy was saying. That's
why. I'm saying I might repeat what you're saying. I have no idea. That's my point. But I'm saying that I don't think. For example, to say that. Oh, the idea, because I agree that there is a rationale that you should think that right to work together is like a good concept and it's an agreeable concept, and I think most people would agree. But I think it's important to remember that it's all relative. It's all in relation to the fact they're trying to get rid of hazagriya. Right. And if you building one wall at a time to get rid of hazagriya, let's say you just build that first wall and you're suing him for it. I don't feel like if you're surrounding him on all four sides, you're not really accomplishing total removal of hazagriya. So therefore, it doesn't seem like such a sympathetic cause that, therefore that's something that halacha should therefore try to incentivize if nothing's actually being totally gained.
Wait, so if you're tobe in advance, then it seems like you could sue for each wall, right?
Right, but let's say you only build one wall in the end.
So you're saying you haven't done anything. So your objection, I think Romy's complaint was from why b'dieved should you have to build all four walls, right? And I think your complaint is why l'chatchila is it sufficient to build one or two?
Right.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, unless you're total, the halacha should be unless you're totally misalik hazagriya altogether, you shouldn't be able to be tovea any of those.
No, you could be tovea. I think you could still be tovea because there is a din of getting rid of hazagriya. So that's still something. I just don't think it's something that should necessarily be incentivized. It's something that's greater. That's what I mean.
Right. So you think even l'chatchila, the tovea should have to be to get rid of all hazagriya. To have a legal right. I think it's interesting.
Right.
Interesting point. Yeah, we need to think more about that. Great. Excellent. So let's now, I just want to make one more point on this discussion here about l'chatchila b'dieved. So did anybody get a chance to see the sugya in Chav Zayin based in Bava Kamma about Avad Nitina L'Nafshei? Yeah, so a very famous sugya, always worthwhile reviewing. So what are the two days in Bava Kamma Chav Zayin about Avad Nitina L'Nafshei? Wants to tell us, Romy? So one view is you could only do Avad Nitina L'Nafshei b'makom seda, right? That's one theory. So the idea is that there's an emergency issue. By the time the courts get involved, the resources are going to be depleted, so you got to act quickly, and you can't wait for the justice system to get involved. The wheels of justice grind too slowly to be of service here. So in that case, everybody agrees of it in a funeral and option. Right? You don't want courts or legal proceedings to undermine the kind of relief that you require. The other view is that, no, you can... this is machlokas. You can do din la'afsmecha even if it's just as easy for you to get the courts involved. So, what do you guys think about that? So, machlokas amorayim, hecha deleka pseida. So, there's no loss for you to wait for the courts to get involved. Rav Yehuda says, lo avidin is din la'afshei. Kiven deleka pseida, lezel kame daina. And Rav Nachman disagrees. What's Rav Nachman's view? If you're doing what's right, if you're doing what's true and what's just, taking back what's yours, why should we make you go through the headache of going through the court system? So I think Rav Nachman has a really compelling position, right? Kivan dividin avid lo tarach. Who could disagree with Rav Nachman's view? Yeah? Toby?
I mean,
in some cases it works, but it's not going to work in all cases, right? Well, so what I just want to take out of here, and you can see Rashi here very nicely explains Rav Yehuda's view. Afilu din emes lo yasehu la'atzmo, eliyelecheis ladayim. It's always preferable for the disputes to be handled by an objective, impartial mediator, third-party dayin, rather than even doing din emes for yourself. So to my mind, this machlokas is important to take a stand or to help us frame the debate between the Baal HaMor and the other Rishonim. The Baal HaMor, in my view, is much more in whose camp? Yeah, exactly. I think it's Rabbi Yehuda's camp. It's just bad policy, maybe for the reasons that Kobe said, maybe for other reasons, to allow people to take the law into their own hands. But it's always better when conflicts are supervised, worked out by an impartial party, or worked out bilaterally by mutual agreement of the parties. And I think that's the perspective that the Baal HaMor is coming from. So if you want to compel a wall, you got to file the complaint, there's got to be a tefiah, and you take it from there. You don't act unilaterally. Whereas the other Rishonim are much more in the Rav Nachman camp. Right, like what we really care about is good results, true results. The process of how they're gotten is the procedure is less significant. So if you're doing a din emes la'atzmacha, that's great. And the only concern is that maybe you'll mess up, but we could always review it after the fact, right? And rectify if you went too far in your doing din la'atzmo. But there's no preference in getting courts involved or maybe having the parties work together even. So I think we actually paskin like Rav Nachman, so at least you can explain why all the Rishonim were really upset with the Baal HaMor. But I think the Baal HaMor works nicely with the type of position that's put forth by Rav Yehuda. And I think it's a deeper philosophical or social question about this question about the method of resolving the disputes, which is what Rav Yehuda and the Baal HaMor are interested in, versus just getting the true result, however you get at it. Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't work in the Baal HaMor so well, because this is the case of when you're like a field to build the fence, it's almost like the field is already there, and now that you have to stop, you have the mountain has not used to stop itself from the fence clear. So if the knee comes like not answering you, whatever, there, so the mountain goes and puts up the walls. It's a little different than saying he's been taking a law into his own hands. He might be doing his own move. He doesn't want to do a hedge and clear. And now he comes back and says, okay, now that I've done this, it's probably a hedge and clear. It happens to be you also have an obligation to stop doing a hedge and clear. So you really should pay me.
Saying here there's like an additional reason for him to act unilaterally?
Yeah,
my guess is that the Makif is really working to protect himself from the Hezekria of the Nika, right? He doesn't care, unless he's like a real tzaddik, right? He's like such a tzaddik that, I'm building this to help you. You could look at it from the other way and say, no, he's really motivated by helping his own interests. But I definitely hear your point. Okay, further thoughts on the, let me just mention one other formulation here that's really nice. In the Gemara in Chav Ches in Bava Kamma, the Gemara at one point talks about the agent who's acting like the agent who's taking a law, is him or herself, in this case, the woman,
she's acting as like the emissary of that. So interesting idea reflecting this notion that courts are just a tool for resolving the disputes or getting at the right outcome. But, you know, when you solve the dispute on your own by taking the law into your own hands, you're doing the exact same thing the court's doing, but you're an agent of the court. So that works nicely with Nachman's perspective, right? There's nothing special about Bezdin handling the dispute. Avinashin and Nachman is really the same thing. He just may lack the expertise to get the answer right, or maybe hot-headed and might go overboard. But in principle, there's no fundamental distinction between the Bezdin's dispute resolution and your own. Okay, thoughts on that? Comments? Everyone good with that analysis? Yeah. Ariel? Kafa Kafa?
I don't know. I respect Ariel. Kind of hard to find. I don't know the basis so well for the law to say that when you do the conflict, some of the things
Yeah, you don't like the idea of working together?
I like the idea of working together to say that you're not going to have
the full recourse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But you can see a little bit where the Balamor is coming from, huh?
Yeah, I see where he's coming from.
Right. Neither did the Ramban or the Ravid or the Miri. Yeah. You're jumping on the anti-Balamor bandwagon. Right. As the Ramban says in so many cases, like what the Balamor? Like Barak le Balamor hazeh levado nasan chokhma. Right. Like, Hashem only gave wisdom to the Balamor. Net? Yeah, we'll talk about that actually. Yeah. That's a very nice formulation. We're going to look at that. Okay, good. That's what I wanted to cover in that issue. So now we move on to another subtopic here, a small subtopic. So I'll make a few arrows here. This topic really is about Hezek Re'ia. It emerges from our sugya, but it's really about the nature of Hezek Re'ia. B'makom shenoagu shelo ligdor. Right? So Daf Beis talks about Hezek Re'ia in the Chatzer, Shmei Hezek, La Shmei Hezek. And what we're interested in now is a related question. Is Hezek Re'ia considered to be cognizable harm or cognizable at all as a benefit, as a thing, as a virtue in an area of Malkam Shinagu Shalo Ligdar, especially in a Bikka? Right? So in a Bikka, it's clear that you can't compel. So for most Rishonim in Malkam Shinagu Shalo Ligdar, you can't compel your neighbor to build a wall to solve Hezek Re'ia. But is there some shame nezek or a shame benefit? Is there some chalos of Hezek Re'ia that still has a halachic trail or registers halachically, even if it doesn't rise to the level of nezek to compel your neighbor to build a wall? Does everybody see that question? Okay. So it's a very nice test case to think about what are we talking about when we talk about Hezek Re'ia Shmei Hezek or Lav Shmei Hezek. So this comes up in our sugya mostly because, anybody want to tell us why this come up? In relation to, so number one, whether saving somebody from Hezek Re'ia and Amakam Shenagu Shelo Ligdar could constitute conferring a benefit. Have I benefited you at all by saving you from Hezek Re'ia when Hezek Re'ia is not a thing, when it's a Malkam Shenagu Shelo Ligdar? Everybody see that? That's the first area where it comes up. What's the second area where it comes up? So applying the principle of, Josh, do you know? Don't know? That's right. Where else is it? Why is it coming up, Sfaria?
This is considered like a state of cluster.
Exactly.
It's
the need not being false to loss to me because the authority is, you know, exactly. So, the Gemara here is related to the Sikha Ben Hazel Chaser, which we'll talk about in a moment as well. And the question is, if I build a wall because of your Hezek Re'ia, am I considered Chaser on your account? Meaning, is your causing hezekiah or imposing hezekiah on me considered a basis for my incurring some loss? B'makom shenagu shelo likdo. So there's a hana question. This is again makom shenagu shelo likdo. There's a nana question, and then secondly, there's a pasuk question. Is your hezekiah imposed on me considered being mechaser me in some way? There's a hand. Saw a hand. You're not sure your question was because you forgot it or because you have yet to formulate it.
Yeah,
but you know that something's bothering you, just don't know what. Aha. So let's look at the Rashba, and then you could hopefully it'll come into a bigger perspective. Either your question sharpened or just okay. So the Rashba has two nice formulations about it. So everybody see the question that we're addressing? Okay. So the Rashba has two important formulations about this. So first he says, some Rishonim seem to view the case as a wall between the Makif and the Nika. So I'll just draw this little diagram. Here's the Nika. And then the question is the walls between, this is all the Makif, right? That's a, we're talking about this wall over here between the Makif and the Nika. And that's a Hezekiah wall that blocked the vision between the properties. And the Rashba has two objections to this, or two points that come up in the context of this discussion. So he says, well, what will be the basis of the Makif charging the Nika and the Makom Shemagu Shelo Likdor? Maybe you'll say Hana. The Nika benefits from the Makif not imposing Hezekiah on the Nika. That's the Yored basis of collecting from the Nika. You confer the benefit on it. The Rashba rejects this. Let's see what he says. He says, if it's a makom shenagu, then you're chayiv for everything, right? You're chayiv right away. So we don't worry about that. But then he says, if it's a makom she'enu chayiv likdar, so he said, and the basis is because of hana, i.e. that he was mistalik mimenu hezek riyaso, that's not viable. That's not a legitimate argument. Why? So say it a little sharper. What does the Rashba say? What's the language that he uses here? Why? Yeah. Once you're in a makom shelo ligdar, hezek riya is not considered hezek. And I take it that the Rashba means not just that it's not considered hezek, it's not even considered hanah. Right? So you might say, oh, hezek riya, shmei hezek, lach shmei hezek, that's about, does it rise to the level of a tort? But everybody agrees that privacy is a benefit. And the Rashba says, no, right? The Rashba says, once we're holding Hezek via Lakshmi Hezek, or the Makom Shenagu Shelo Likdor Nedika, Hezek Ria is nothing. Right? It's not even enough to be shielded from. That's a really strong position to take. And so he says, oh, the only type of hana that could be at issue here is Hezek Ria of Shane Hezek of Shane Bereva. Because once you hold Lakshmi Hezek, that means Hezekiah is not cognizable halachically. It has no halachic imprint. It's really a radical position, right? You easily could have said that it's not tortious, and therefore you can't compel a wall, etc. But it is some benefit that you receive. Skaria?
2.1, like one important. You normally say there's a mitzvah, but then that means a practice to do or not to do something. Practice to build a wall or not build a wall.
Yeah.
It's kind of odd that this minhag determines like a legal reality. Like, okay, if in this town, like, you know, in this house, we believe that Hezekiah and Abibah is Hezekiah. Like, that's not subject to what people's belief.
Yeah, this goes back to like the first week, my back and forth with Kobe, I think, right? And when we talk about makom, if there's a minug to not care about Hezekiah, I think we have this debate, right? Does that mean that Hezekiah is not a thing, or it just means that there's a minug to not care about it? I think that was the gist of that. Does that make sense, Kobe? Yeah. Yeah. Seems like you're right. Is this like so I think it's probably totally right.
Happens in a month to know Lindor. It means it's Kosher Nezek and it's full mana, it's full Nezek. Like, we're just like, yeah, no, it's really always nothing. And this is just like, yeah, some places they're a bunch of instances and like they just haven't made enough to put up a fence, but really guys, like,
yeah, I think
so there's a bit of a mirage up here. So
I think it's a really great point.
Determine this, like, either considering this legal principle to be something or nothing.
Yeah, so I'm not bothered by that because I think I like the idea. I mean, to me, it's very intuitive that social facts sometimes ground the halachic metaphysics, right? I guess if you're like a real brisker Soloveitchikian, then the metaphysics just exist on their own, right? Like there's nothing
in metaphysics to respond to possibilities.
Okay, yeah, good. The point is that in this example, it's very clear that the social facts are going to determine the halachic facts, right? So Zachariah is saying, well, it's strange that whether Hezekiah is a thing or not a thing should depend on the practices in society, right? That's kind of your point, right? We may look to the practices to determine whether it's legally actionable or whether halacha is going to enforce you here, but like this objective question of Shmei Hezek, Lashmei Hezek, or Hanar shouldn't really depend on social facts. I think that's okay. I think that something like Hezekiah is exactly that, right? It might depend on what posture society takes towards it. And that's going to determine the halachic valuation of Hezekiah as either Hezek or Lashmi. That's my perspective. And Ned, I think you're okay with that, right? You're good with that, or you're totally fine with that. Yeah. So we're in agreement. Yeah, good. And I think that's clearly where the Rosh was coming from, right? So now you can take my view and still disagree with the Rosh, right? You could say, okay, social facts determine whether it's tortious, but why does a minug about treating it as tortious or not tortious automatically commit you to whether it's defined as a halachic benefit? The social facts themselves might distinguish between the tortious question and the benefit question. But the Rashba seems to just like be categorical about it. Either Hezekiah is a thing or it's not a thing. Right? And then Hana and Nezek go together. Romy, you had a hand on this?
Yeah, I just think once you say Lashmi Hezek, it means exactly Hana. Meaning, I guess it's a question of the thing that it is.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a bit of a chiddush to say that once society is noeg shelo ligdor, that automatically means that it's not considered hana.
You're saying it's
really
the
actual right, or even societal. Like it's not obvious to me that if society is not that people aren't willing to shell out the cost of offense. Generally speaking, if there isn't some benefit to privacy.
No, that's what I'm saying. Once I'm arguing against society, once you say that we said, okay, Lashmi Hezek. So we're not no political wall, and that if I can be put the wall, have they convert benefit on you? That's what it means. That part of it is the personal
ethics. Correct. Yeah, I agree with that. Right, totally. You distinguish between those two points. Yeah. Now the Rashi does a similar thing. So a lot of the Rishonim here are just trying to square the analysis in our sugya with the Gemara Bava Kamma and Daf Kaf. They already see that then I have Zavol Kafzer, how our sugya gets entangled with that. So we'll look at that also very quickly. But the question is, the Rashba, so if I
build a wall between the properties like this, like in this sphere. So is the makif considered chaser because of the nikah? So the Rashba wants to say, of course, prima facie, you want to say, you might think, of course, the makif is chaser because of the nikah. Why? Right, he's only building a wall because the nikah is being mazik in with hezekriya. This goes against Kobe's point that the wall is always built to help the mazik from being mazik, right? But the Rashba's point is that, let's see over here. Im kishagadar beino bein chavero kei lishmar menu mehezek riyaso. Heichi kari le eino chaser. What world is there where you could read this as the makif not being chaser because of the nikah? Avadai chaser hu. Of course you're chaser because you only built this wall. Kedei lasalik miel of nezek shal yechavero meziko. Vizeh nena vizeh chaser hu machmaser. Right, your chaser machmas the nikah, but it's his hezek riyah that motivates your building the wall. That's a really good objection, no? Yeah? So what does the Rashba respond? That's the Yesh Makshim. Right, how could the Gemara in Bava Kamma entertain a view that this is lo chaser if the whole purpose of the wall is because your chaser, because Hezek Riyah is harming you? So what's the answer?
Hezek Riyah is a harm. There's no such thing as Hezek Riyah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't be viewed as chaser machmaso if it's a makom shenagu shelo b'dur. Right? So once Hezek Riyah is considered non-portious or not something that society usually acts on, then even if you're perturbed by his Hezek Riyah and it bothers you, halachically that doesn't register as chaser machmaso, because once you're in a makom shenagu shelo b'dur, Hezek Riyah is non-cognizable. Meaning non-cognizable as nezek, it's non-cognizable as hana, and it's non-cognizable as imposing a cost. The chaser is about, is he imposing a cost on you? And the answer here is, it can't be viewed as a cost if Mabu Snuggle Lindor, in the same way that it's not viewed as a benefit. So the Rashba here is very consistent that Shmei Hezek or Lav Shmei Hezek or Mabu Snuggle Lindor or Shlo Lindor is categorical about whether Hezek Riyah registers halachically. It's not just about whether Hezek Riyah is a harm or a tort. Yes.
Any obligation that emerges from the existence of the first party. Second,
chaser? Well, I'm not sure, because he might still be thinking in terms of a cost, but a cost could be defined in terms of nuisance, agmas nefesh. So the idea is that if you're building this wall because his hezek riyah, that means like you're bothered by it, right? So you're chaser, what, in utility, right? You're chaser in happiness, you're chaser in land use because of his hezek riyah. Right, so I don't think you have to say that he's moving away from chaser in terms of cost. The hava mina is that hezek riyah of makom shenagu shelo ligdor, of course, is a cost. It's nevertheless a cost, even though society doesn't recognize it as nezek. But then the Rashba seems to say in his answer, no. Once makom shenagu ligdor, hezek riyah can't even be viewed as a cost in the same way that the Rashba thought it can't be viewed as a benefit. Right. Everybody with me? Yeah? Ariel, you with me? Did your question come into clear perspective or?
Yeah, I mean, more I was already going on the question of the
Great. So we're good now?
Okay.
Okay.
And this is very specific in the victim, but you can't say that any issues.
Well, there might be issues of SNUSA and ABICA. I mean, I'm seeing people maybe get distressed, or I don't know what they do in their fields. What do people do in their fields? I don't know. They do like mila disnusa, maybe not as much as a chaser. As a chaser. Well, remember the Ramban about certainly about Lishna Bisha and Aina Bisha, right? So if those are valued.
Like when somebody subjectively say that they believe that
they're
damaged.
Yeah, good. So far in the Rashba, it seems like there's
would
no.
Would it be different in a Fakta or something subjectively say
you not damaged? Yeah, so I think that's a really interesting question. I think it's, and these we've shown to me, you're right. This discussion might be limited to Bika, but it's an open question whether they would say the same thing in a Maham Shinag with Shalol Ligdar in Chatzah, 100%. Yeah, great point. Okay, the Ramban on Daf Dalet and Beis basically says the same thing the Rashba says on both issues. Really, the Rashba says the same thing the Ramban says, just the Rashba says a little more clearly. Yeah. Anybody think that the Ramban is saying something a little different? You get to see here, it's an interesting formulation, a little more precise than the Rashba. The Ramban says, Malcolm Shinagu Shalol Ligdar Hu Lo Mikri Chaser, Kivin Delo Chashablu Hezek. Ramban's a little more explicit about if it's not Hezek, then it's not Chaser, which is just interesting because you might have said, you could distinguish between the standard for Nezek and the standard for Chaser. So Ramban here might be saying something like Ned was getting at. Chaser has to be defined in terms of Nezek. Whereas the Rashba just said, it's a little maybe Chaser, even Shalom Yom. Ramban's a little more explicit about connecting the Nezek issue as the barometer for Chaser. And then he says, the second formulation about Hana, Ilum Yishim Hanas, Hezek Ria, Shehaya Nizok, Eino Chayev Klum, Da Malcham Shlo Noag Ligdor. So that formulation is exactly like the Rashba's. Okay, so that's the Rashba and the Ramban. Who disagrees with the Rashba and the Ramban? Josh?
I think that's a crazy jump to say that just because there's no actual
tour
of the
Zeke,
and therefore there's no
Hanah,
that where
does
that come from?
Yeah, it's a little radical. The Ramban himself only makes the jump if it's not Nezek and it's not Chaser. He doesn't explicitly say that because it's not Nezek.
What about
that? There he says, because the Muslim is not Muslim, right? Which is like the Rashba, meaning there's something about the fact that people are in Makbid with the Bidari. That tells us that Hezek Ria is not a thing at all. But it's not an explicit jump. But you might say, like I was saying earlier, correct?
That could be true, but even so.
Right. We build fences for harms. We don't build fences for just like mere benefits.
But if someone did build a fence, there would be a benefit.
Correct. 100%. I think that's the flaw in the whole Rashba Ramban analysis. Totally. Benji.
You say the same way that when we confer a benefit on some on a field, which is Chesley Lita. That you can charge it for, but so in a case where the benefit is like expected, that's what you can charge. So Malcolm Shalom Nag and Ligdar, then when you build the walls, it's like notes of the Jainasu Lita.
Yeah, that's so very possible. But remember, even in a side of Jainasu Lita, you pay something. Right. Here they're saying that there's no Hanal whatsoever. Right. So it seems like they're going to a more radical conclusion. Yeah. Okay, so who disagrees with this approach to the Ramban and the Rashba? The Meiri citing the Chachmei Sfarah, the Gonei Sfarah. The Meiri is really great on the Sugya. He has all these, deyos clearly outlined. So what is the view of the Meiri citing the Gonei Sfarah? Pretty nice position. Anybody get a chance to see this Meiri? Ezra, did you get a chance to see the Meiri?
Yeah,
Eitan, do you get a chance to see the mirror yet? No? Rafi, you get a chance to see the mirror? Not yet. Josh, you get a chance to see the mirror yet? But everyone's working so hard already. Like, sorry, you get a chance to see this mirror talking star yet? Not in this context, not to like copy and paste it into this section, right? Yeah, framing is important. Rami, you got a chance?
Yeah, he basically says, well, other positions that I'm not as different term. And even if you're not a Nezre,
you still give him one up, I guess, even if I'm a Nezre, you still give him one up, and therefore you're still concerned.
Yes, still a Chisaron, or I think more on the positive side that you confer to benefit. Yeah, I think the Miri is talking not about Zenenev Zelo Chaser. He's talking more about Mahane.
Well, yeah, that's right. We also said,
we'll talk about the Zen. We'll talk about that part in a second. But yes, very good. So the Miri cites the Goni Svarad, who say that this is about Hezekiah, not about Shane Varegel. Okay. And they say that this Mishnah on Daf Dalid is even in a makom shenagu shelo ligdor. Okay. So even in a makom shenagu shelo ligdor, that's the key point. And what are you collecting from the nika for? So he says, let me just make sure I have this right.
Guys, tell me if I'm right about this. The Meiri citing the Chachmei Sfarad thinks that here's the Nika. Then again, we have our Makif out here. And we're talking about building a wall. Let me do this even better. Let's say Nikaf is over here, just to make it a little more simple. And Makif, let's say, is out here. And the Makif builds a wall here, blocking the Rosh Hasharabim. So there's the Rosh Hasharabim, the Nikaf, the Makif builds a wall like those highway walls, right, to keep the noise out. From a neighborhood. So the Makif just builds a wall here, protecting himself and the Nika. Okay? Or you could also just reverse it. I guess you could put the Makif here, the Nika here, and the Nika is benefiting from the Makif's wall that he put blocking the Rosh Hasharabim. Fair? That's how the Gonei Sfard read it. But the thing that you're presenting here is the Hezek Re'iyah of the B'nai Rosh Hasharabim. That's what the Makif is protecting the Nika from. And why are you collecting? Because Ho'olu Mahanho. The Miri is explicit that it's because the Makif is Mahane the Nika by building this wall. For what? For being Mesalik, the Hezekiah of the Rabbin. Now, you can see over here he says, Harei Shemana Af Michavero Hezekiah Shal B'nai Rosh Hasharabim. Again, he says, Mikamakam Haneu, he's pretty explicit about this. The question, though, is he says explicitly that this is Makam Shinagu Shalo Ligdar, or at least it's applicable even in a Makam Shinagu Shalo Ligdar. So, what do you get from that, Romy? What's the conclusion? Exactly. Does everybody see that? So from the fact that this is Makom Shenagu Shelo Ligdor, or at least applicable even in this case of Makom Shenagu Shelo Ligdor, that shows you that Hezek Re'iyah, or blocking Hezek Re'iyah, is still a cognizable benefit, even when no one takes Hezek Re'iyah seriously in that bikka, or that society. So it's the exact opposite of the Ramban and the Rashba's view. So we get a very fundamental machlokas here about whether Hezekiah is cognizable as a halachic benefit/cost
in a Malkam Shnagu Sholigdar. The Meiri citing the Chachmei Svara thinks, yes, very much so. It is a halachic, it is halachically cognizable. And the question of Shmei Hezek, Lav Shmei Hezek, is about Hezek Ri as a tort. So I think that's a very nice and very fundamental machlokas that really belongs to the discussion of Daf Beis, but it takes you till Daf Dalit to tease that out. Yeah, great. Let me just make one more point in this regard. I think the second Deya in the Meiri also takes a stand on this question. So what's the second Deya in the Meiri? What's the, doesn't matter who, he calls it the Gedolei HaRabbanim. And back to this paradigm with the wall in between the Makif and the Nuka. Meiri says it's Mitzad Hezek Riyah HaGomor, which he means Beino Leveino, between the two properties, right? So it's this wall that's being built, but it's a Makom Shenagu Shelo Ligdar. And we'll talk exactly about this. So you can't compel him L'chatchila to chip in for a wall. That's the whole point of Makom Shenagu Shelo Ligdar. The Meiri does not even want to say that you could build it unilaterally against his will and compel him to chip in, as Malcolm Schnabuchelovics are. But he does say what? Can we get a chance to see this meeting? What does he say? Josh?
That if it was the Nikas, then in the fourth wall, that would be showing. I don't know if it's not phrasing exactly like he is, but it's as if he was a Shoyah because he chose a client.
Great, so we'll talk about the Shliyafas component in a moment. You're right. If the Nikaf is Amad and completed the walls, but then the Nikaf is chayv to pay the Makir. Why? Hoel the Gila Bidaito should know how the path. As you showed your intent that this is good for you. Now, obviously, that's a lot weaker than a Yore type theory. This is the Gila Das, the Michale. Like a Shlichus agency ratification type thing. So we'll come back to Meiri for that purpose. But for our current question of whether Hezek Riya is cognizable, the Malkam Shenagu Shelo Ligdor, according to the Meiri, it's cognizable if there's an expression of Das de Nichole. So it's not cognizable as being Mahane somebody. But it is cognizable such that if they accept it willingly, or they show that this was something that they liked, then it could become a financial liability for them, and they have to chip in. So does everybody see that? What we could actually document here, assuming our analysis is correct, but I guess that's always an assumption, is perhaps there are different levels of Hezek Riya. So some Rishonim say it's all just one big issue. Shmei Hezek, Lav Shmei Hezek, and everything turns on that. The cognizable and not cognizable. But then we actually see that there are different legal questions. Is Hezek Riya considered being machaser you for the purpose of Zenon and Zalapasa? Is it considered being Nana for the purpose of the Yorei discussion? And on these two issues, they go together. We have the debate between the Meiri citing the Chachmei Svara versus the Rashba and the Ramban, correct? I should say, of course, there's the Nezek issue. This has a Gria Shnei Hezek at 2 days of the Gemara that we know. But then we actually have this Meiri. In the second day, who says, in a Gilui Das de Nichole. Let's call that post facto ratification. Is Hezek Riya considered cognizable? And then here he says, yes. So actually, maybe I should have reordered these. So I'll say, we have the Richter scale. Of which is the most cognizable. So actually, as the Richter scale from bigger to smaller, right? So
Three is the biggest type of cognizability. It would be nezek, as a shmanim or shmei hezek, it's true nezek. And of course, we might even say in the Ramban sense that this is like kutra besa kise, etc. The idea is you can also distinguish between different levels of nezek, as we saw in that idea. I would say number two is the gilui das, the nichale shu, because, is that what I want to say? No, it's not what I want to say. Sorry. I got this. This thing is right. Number two is koser and nene. Because is it considered cognizable such that objectively you're considered to have benefited or that you're considered to have lost if you're subject to my hesitation? So that's this question. Number one, the most delicate or the one that's registering hezekiah as the lightest, kind of the one that's the hardest to detect on halakhic radar, but yet detectable, is the skilei das and nichale. Right? So as objective hana, the Meiri agrees, the Meiri thinks, as objective hana, the Meiri agrees that hezekiah is not cognizable. But as this ratification where there's an expressive gilui das and nichale, then that could register hezekiah on the halakhic radar. Is that clear? You could ask me to clarify. I'm happy to go over that. That sound good to you guys? Yes? Josh? Crystal clear? Yeah. Great. Sorry?
Does the presence of this last factor gilui das and nichale, consider it hana, does that kind of call the question, the more general question of nehana? So maybe just hezekiah is just always going to be a kind of a tenuous or kind of amorphous kind of thing. And it's all really about like just like makom shenagu or lots of people and whether they do this as valuable or not do this as valuable.
That's
and you just kind of say, it's just in a lots of we always think people are gonna do this as beneficial to them.
That's
so, you know, like when you're talking about like Bhakama set up for balance and sense, and that's like I used to have a barrel of apples, now the barrel of apples got eaten. I lost money.
Right.
Versus here, like the non sorrow is always going to be like more amorphous and like said, maybe more for the social convention.
I think that's a really interesting point, but I don't think you have to go there to make sense of this principle. Like, you know, Kamisha Nisratza Bibinyano, that formulation is very interesting. In Amiri. I think this is more about when does hezekiah register as halakhically cognizable? So maybe not as mezek, maybe not as hana, but yes, as misha nisrata vivinyano. So it doesn't speak, I think it speaks less to the subjective, I think it speaks less to the subjective assessment of hezekiah and more to what level of a chalos, if you'll put it, or what type of concept is hezekiah? And we can test that by what does it take to pick up hezekiah on our radar screen? Right? Is it picked up on the Nezek radar? Is it picked up on our radar? Or is it only picked up in a Nisratza Bibinyano type radar? At least that's how I'm thinking about it. Romy?
Yeah,
for sure. I think in this Meiri, we're going to come back to this. I think this Meiri is so clear that gilui das is different from hana, and we'll see why in a minute in this Meiri. Because he thinks that you need the nikah to do an action that is accepting the thing. And he even says, are you kilu aso bishlichuso? Which to my mind is clearly a different legal principle than the fact that you received hana. Right. So we'll come back to that point. Yeah. Great. Okay. Could we go for 5 more minutes? You guys gonna throw a rebellion if we go for 5 more minutes? Yeah. Let's ask Josh because we know Josh has gotta go golfing. Josh, can we get I'm gonna put you on the screen here. Josh, could we have 2 more minutes?
Take 10.
What time
What time does the game start?
When's
the tee off?
This is my priority. So we could go for another 10 minutes at least.
Whoa!
As far as I'm concerned,
that's like the most moving thing I've heard anyone say in years. That's great. Okay, so Josh gave us 10 minutes. We won't take the full 10 minutes. We'll just use 5 minutes because the rest of us all have to commute to get to our golf games. You know, so we need the extra time. So let me just make a quick comment here. Yeah, I'll just take 5 minutes. So our sugya, so I can get out all these side issues in the sugya so we can come back to the how much you pay question. Our sugya comes up in Bava Kamma Daf Chaf in the Gemara's discussion of Zen Nana Vizelo Chaser. Now, I think it's a mistake to treat Zen Nana Vizelo Chaser, Zen Nana Vizel Chaser as a principle distinct from Yored and the Mahana discussion. Okay, so it's clearly a very similar type of discussion. For now, we're going to assume that it's actually the same discussion with one proviso. You might think of this as an equitable proviso or just a moral proviso, which is Yored is a chiddush, the idea of Yored, right? The fact that if I am conferring a benefit on you that you didn't contract, that you have to pay me for the benefit you receive. We agree that that's somewhat of a chiddush? Yeah, right? But it would be unfair to impose liability for the benefit on the recipient, if the conferrer was not put at an extra loss or didn't suffer an extra cost in conferring the benefit. So the idea is that if it's then nana vizel lo chaser, it doesn't make sense to apply the yored principle. Why is that? So one way of thinking about it, we threw this out last time, is that maybe Yored itself is motivated by the idea of unjust enrichment. It's really unfair for me to be enriched at your expense. And that really only makes sense if it's at your expense. If my being enriched comes at no cost to you, then you might say, the whole principle of Yored falls apart. So that's one way of thinking about why the principle of Yored gets neutralized in a scenario of Zen Nene Vizel Lo Chasa. Does that make sense to you just as an explanation? Yeah, so I think that's one way of understanding this principle. And you could just see the Amiri's not explicit about this. But he is very clear just throughout our sugya that the only time the nene is chayav to pay is if the mehane is chaser. So you can see here, mikamakam hoel mehanho vehigia chesron b'sibaso. Right, it has to be that the mehane incurred some expense in conferring the benefit. And he just uses that formulation throughout. He says again, blah, blah, blah. Afa pisha nane sapini begidro shachitzon, hoelu mikol makom ein hamakif chaser bisibaso, shahare lo garam lo hekif meribo klal ein machayvinoso. It's part of the machayiv of mehane that it only makes sense to apply it if there's also chisaron. Does that make sense to you guys? That's at least, I think the best way to think about the relationship between Yored and Zen Nene Vizel Lo Chaser. In other words, Zen Nene Vizel Chaser is just an application of the Yored principle. Okay? Now, let me just make one further point, and let me hold off on this point for a second. There is a very fascinating debate amongst the Rishonim in Bava Kamma about the following issue. So
there's not always a correspondence between the amount of hana you confer and the amount of loss, the cost you suffer when you impose the hana. Right? So let's take the easy case of I confer lots of hana on you, but at a very minor expense to myself. So how much should the benefit recipient pay? Does he pay the amount of the benefit he receives? Or does he just make the mehane whole by covering the cost that the mehane incurred? Everybody see that? That's a very important debate in the Rishonim. So let me give you the case. So the case that the Rishonim discuss is our case, Makif and Nikaf. So let's say the value of the walls to the Nikaf are worth $10,000. The Hekif Yisera that the Makif incurs is worth $1,000. So is it sufficient that the Nikaf just pay the $1,000 cost and now it becomes Zenene Vizelofazer? Or does he have to pay the $10,000 benefit that he received? This is a machlokas rishonim. Tosos in Bava Kamma says, once there's any hekef, Tosos in Ksuvis Daf Lamed says, once there's any hekef yisera, you're mechaye b'chol hana. Or in a case of when you take up residence in somebody else's apartment, the Gemara says it's chaser because you might cause a little blackening to the walls, right? You always scrape the walls in some way. So because there's a tiny amount of chisaron, you're chayav to pay for all the hana that you're getting. So I think that's totally consistent with the unjust enrichment theory, right? You're chayav to pay for the hana so long as there's some expense to the mehana. It would be unjust for you to benefit at his expense. But there's a little legal trick that the moment there's some expense, it just becomes wrong for you to benefit from his service. And therefore, you have to pay for what you benefit. I think that that shita is still consistent with the unjust enrichment explanation. The Nemuke Yosef has a different theory in Bava Kamma Daf Tes and Daf Erif. He cites the Rama, who says, when you take up residence in somebody's house and you're chayev to pay because he's chaser in the blackness of the walls, you chip the walls a little bit. So all you have to do is pay the shir masha hefsido b'shachros hakosla of altfelo. All you have to pay is the value of the loss, the minor loss that he incurred. This is two deos in the Rishonim about whether you could just pay off the chisaron, or once there's chisaron, you pay for the whole hana. Everybody clear with that, machlokas? So I just want to say that I think there's no fundamental disagreement here between the views. Because even the view that holds that you could pay for the chisaron just views this as a legal trick in the opposite direction. For the same reason that Zen Nenev is a lo chaser is pater, because he's not actually losing by conferring the benefit, there's a legal trick that allows you to just make it the case by paying him his loss, but now it's Zen Nenev is a lo chaser. You guys see that? So to my mind, the underlying issue is always going to be mehana. You're chayev to pay when you receive a benefit. But there's an exception that we don't hold you liable if it comes at no cost to the benefit conferred. Zenana bezelo chasa. Then there's a debate about what happens when he's actually chaser. So do we still view that as unjust enrichment because of the fact that he lost something in conferring the benefit? That's the view of the Rosh and the Ritva, and therefore the Nene pays the full value of the benefit. Or do we say there's a legal trick in the opposite direction, allowing the recipient of the Hana to just undo the unjust aspect by saying, now it's Zen Nenev is there, lo chaser, because I'm going to pay you out the cost of your concern. And that's just, I think, one way of viewing the issue in Zen Nenev is lo chaser as being a subset of the application of the din of Mahana. Does that make sense, guys? Yeah? Okay. Great. Thoughts, comments? Josh.
No,
I think that's a totally different issue. That's about evaluating the amount of benefit you receive. Yeah, so I would hold on. Yeah. Okay, guys, we're good? Everyone good at this material? Okay, Josh, good luck on the rounds. And I will pick up on Tuesday. And we're just going to actually wrap up pretty much our discussion of Makif and Nikaf and its connection to the Yorid, Asuyalita, Eino Asuyalita, that discussion in the Ramban on Tuesday. That'll wrap up most of our discussion in the Sugya. We'll talk about also the rate of compensation on Tuesday in our Sugya. All right? Great. Shkaf, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah.